Hello everyone, Neil Patelia, thank you for downloading the latest episode of the Indian Startup Show. So today my guest is Ravi Dravidi. He's the founder of Push Engage and Coupon Ronnie, and he's also a successful angel investor as well. So Push Engage is a push notification platform for browsers, and Coupon Ronnie is one of India's top coupon sites. So in this episode, Ravi talks about how he got started, advice on how you can grow your user base, pricing strategies as well. We also talk about his angel investing, what he actually looks for when investing in companies, his favorite startups in India, what he likes and dislikes about startups, to play the piano, and his ideal dinner guest. So please enjoy the show. Thank you. Hi, Ravi. Thanks for coming on the show today.
Hey, Neil. Thanks for having me here.
Cool. Please tell me what you're building, please.
Sure. So currently, I am working on building pushengage.com. Mm-hmm. We are a browser notification platform, and we are among the leaders in the space. It's been 17 months since we launched, and we're live in 115 countries with over 10,000 websites. And we believe we are among the top three players in that. Mm-hmm. Again, the way browser push notifications work is you get a user to subscribe to your website when they come, mm-hmm. and then later on you can send notifications to get them back. So that's the current startup I've been building.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Where did you get the idea from?
Yeah, no, actually the idea came from my prior startup, which I built, which is called Coupon Ronnie. Mm-hmm. It's a leading site for coupons in India, mm-hmm. Where you could get coupons for all online shopping. So we always are in the market to look for new channels to acquire as well as engage users. And back when Chrome announced support for this channel in April 2015, we were among the early players to build an in-house tool, mm-hmm. for internal consumption. And within a month or two when we built it, we saw huge ROI as well as, you know, metrics as compared to email. So when you send an email to 100 people, we would see 3 clicks or 4 clicks, but here we were seeing like 30. Mm-hmm. So it was 10x higher. And that gave us, you know, the idea that, and when we looked around, there weren't many tools in the same space. And we said, you know what, it's a great opportunity for us to make this available to everybody. And then we kind of made it a SaaS platform, and we launched it in around December. And that's how this started.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So who's the actual product for then? Is it for consumers or is it for businesses?
Yeah, no, great question. So it's kind of, in a sense, for both, like both get impacted, but the buyer of this product is essentially a person who runs the website. Like for your website, you might be the one who's looking out for a way to, you know, re-engage or get the customer back. So most websites have this problem that 100 people visit, but maybe 20, 30 come back, remaining never come back. So how do you solve it? Most people will go about collecting emails. And now this is a new channel where you can collect a push subscription. And we have seen push subscription is much higher as well as the click rate is higher. So technically it is for everybody, but right now what we see is a lot of website owners, whether e-commerce, whether it is SaaS companies, whether it's consumer companies, whether it's, you know, content sites, they all are using this right now. And eventually we see a lot of bloggers, individual bloggers also using it. And we have quite a bunch of them.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned some really amazing stats there. Is that what you expected when you first started?
That's a great question. We actually, if I were to be honest, yes, actually. So my target for the first year was to hit 10,000 sites. Okay. In fact, I'm late by 2 months. So, but I actually fundamentally believe this is a huge, huge space. If you think about email marketing, you know, everybody else uses email, right? So we believe within few years, everybody is going to use push notifications. And we think, so right now we're live with 10,000, but we think there could be hundreds of thousands of sites which would come live on our platform in a year or two. Mm-hmm. And so that's how big we think the potential is. And I'll give you one use case. I know for some folks out there who are listening, and maybe for you also, people say, hey, that push notification, the annoying stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Because I know 95% people click no to that. But remember, if done correctly by the website, it's actually huge. Let's say you're looking for a ticket from London to New York and you would buy it when it's below £500. Now, that alert you won't mind. Let's say there is a payment alert that there's the payment due tomorrow. So there are type of use cases. And I have talked about the most basic ones, but the more advanced ones are around when you have, let's say, a two-sided marketplace, which means, let's say, you have a marketplace or a platform where you are selling some object and somebody else is bidding on it. now when somebody bids, you are notified, and somebody outbids, you are notified. So there are many use cases where you wish the website came to you in your browser and you came to know about something instantly. And those are the cases this is ideally built for. And I think it's going to make life much more easier for consumers. Of course, there'll be a misuse given the channel has a high ROI, but I think there's going to be tremendous adoption.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. What goals or objectives have you set for the next 12 months?
Sure. See, I think given the growth we are seeing, I would say that this year we should see another 4 to 5x from last year, and we should continue to see another 4 to 5x for next 2-3 years because we are so early in the innings. So that's at least the growth we expect in terms of adoption. And I think in terms of maturity, high level, I would say, so right now only Chrome and Firefox and Safari support it, but we know that Internet Explorer is going to support it soon. So once they come on board, it's going to get even more accelerated because now 100% of traffic is reachable through push notifications. And I just think that there will be more adoption. I also think there'll be more maturity when it comes to campaigns and the tools. And again, it'll be as targeted as it could be as opposed to a blanket notification going out to everybody. So I think that's where, you know, we envision our growth as well.
How do you make money out of this then?
So it's a monthly subscription model. It's a classic software as a service. And based on your subscribers, we bill you. Mm-hmm. And that's how we make money.
And how much does it cost?
It's pretty, you know, pretty, I guess, reasonable. So we actually have a forever free plan, which is free until 2,500 subscribers. And post that, it's a $29 till 50,000 subscribers, and 50,000 to 150 is $99. And then post that, you know, we have the enterprise pricing, which can vary anywhere from $229 to $600. Mm-hmm. But that's mainly for larger websites with more than 150,000 subscribers.
How did you come up with, like, the pricing strategy? Did you have to, like, experiment with different costs and things?
Sure.
Like that.
No, I think pricing is extremely hard for SaaS, and I think over time it evolves. The way we looked at it was that if I have a customer in a geo, let's say in Nigeria, where per click monetization is X, am I able to generate ROI? So the way we did the math on this was, all right, if using my tool, you are able to generate extra 10,000 clicks, then would you be happy to get those clicks for, say, $29 if you are on my $29? So that's where, and we priced it for, let's say, the geo, which are probably the most conservative in terms of their monetization. And that's why for some geos, it's a slam dunk. I mean, it's a no-brainer because it works for all. So
good stuff. Let's talk about Coupon Rani then. How did it get started, and how does it work? How does the platform work?
Absolutely. So around 5 years back, I had moved back from US. Prior to that, I actually was with a venture fund. I was investing in US startups. And apart from investing, there was a scenario. They actually asked me to go in and run an online business of their portfolio company. I did that, and I actually enjoyed that the most as opposed to pure investing. And so when I came back, and I came back primarily for personal reasons, I was, you know, the only child of my parents. And I also wanted to, I felt the opportunity was huge in India. So when I came back, I said, I can still do investing, maybe on the part-time, so I'm still an angel investor, but let's build a startup, or let's build some companies from scratch. And so the first thing I came up was something which is around digital marketing, which does not involve inventory. And so it was somewhat of a top-down, and I kind of came up with few things that looked really good, and one of them was couponing. Of course, it's an extremely hard space to execute in because the barrier to entry is low. You see tons of thousands of sites, folks doing it part-time, folks doing it side. But then we also felt that if we really knew digital marketing, this is kind of the way to prove it. And so we just, got started, around July of 2012. And that's how the journey started. And then we did pretty well. I mean, it took a while to get to a really good stage, but the first year was all about building the product. And then somewhere around a year and a half, we started, doing really well on the marketing side. And we kind of grew tremendously, and we came, one of the last sites in India. We do between 500,000 to, 2 million visits a month, depending on the month. And again, we have over 3,600 online stores listed on our website, and it's doing well.
What's in it for the retailers then?
So for the retailers, what happens is they understand that when customers are making the buying decision, they probably need something like a coupon to close the deal. So we are like the deal closers in some sense. And so for them, they get extra customers, so they're probably trying to pull customer from somewhere else. And so they actually, the model is fairly straightforward. They actually give us commission on every successful sale that we are able to generate. So from that perspective, it's a pure performance play, and it, unlike, you know, any kind of display or any of the advertising. And so they're happy to, you know, share a percentage of commission, and that's the main model.
What's the most popular coupon?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you can guess. I mean, so the most popular ones are, especially today, I mean, today is Ugadi in India, or Gudi Parva. So it's a off. So today it would be something around a pizza coupon. So it would be a Domino's. Yeah, so it could be a Domino's or a Pizza Hut coupon or a fresh menu. I mean, some of the large, you know, vendors who do online. On other days, you know, maybe on a Thursday when you're trying to book a bus ticket, it could be a Red Bus coupon, which is a large bus ticketing, or, you know, other kinds. So mainly the large ones are from a category, and everybody knows this. It's going to be food, it's going to be bus tickets, and then finally mobile recharge, right? So as you know, bulk of the country in India is on a prepaid model, and so they actually recharge their mobile so many times, and every time they try to add some currency to their mobile phone, they're looking for some deals, right? And so those are the, actually from the order, it'll be recharged first and then any of the other stuff. So that's where we also see volume. And then apart from that, I mean, on a long run, we always see so much sales of mobile phones happening online, and again, those who are selling in India, they know this. So those are kind of the four top four categories, if I may, and you could always pick which is selling the most on a given day. In fact, today, for example, you asked me, it's actually Amazon has announced a 2-day sale for a mobile, I mean, the general mobile sale. So we expect that, and as well as maybe the Visa stuff, to do really well today.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned you've got a large user base. Any tips on how to grow a user base?
Yeah, no, great question. See, according to me, everything around consumer internet business is about traffic, if you know how to generate. So for us, what has really worked well is twofold. One is being able to understand how to acquire users from search. Whether it is a paid search or whether it is, you know, organic search. And we feel it's very closely aligned to if you're able to serve the customer well, which means if a customer comes on your site loads very quickly. Mm-hmm. And once they're looking for the coupon, the one they're looking for, they're able to find it quickly. And that experience, I mean, it's, I know a lot of folks say this, but it's actually true. If the user experience in your site is such that the user is able to accomplish what they're looking for, Google and other, you know, platforms notice you, and they actually get you more traffic. So I think it's all about user experience. So we have done that right. We've done the search portion, and then apart from that, we do decent amount of work on social media. Mm-hmm. We run contests on Twitter, trying to create more brand awareness, and then finally, I would say to create some kind of exclusivity, we try to get a lot of exclusive coupons on any day. You would have between 250 to 400 exclusive coupons on Coupon Rani. Which is only present on the website. And so that actually also helps us get traffic.
Mm-hmm. You said it's a crowded market. Obviously, why do you think you've succeeded where many businesses?
Sure. No, I think there were two things. One is I think we excel in marketing. And so that's where I think we have succeeded. We were very innovative in some of the methods we did. Second, I think is our focus on the user per se. So one of the big gaps in the space, or two gaps, is number one is around most people will only update coupons for stores that pay commission, right? Mm-hmm. And that's so obvious. I mean, and in the market like India, for example, there may be 350 to 400 stores that pay commission, but we actually not only focus on them, but on the remaining 3,000 other stores out there. Because for a user, then we become the go-to place for some merchant who's probably not even giving us commission, right? So that's kind of the first thing I would say. We focus a lot on the user. Second is, in this industry, a lot of folks to monetize, you know, may have expired coupons or even coupons that don't actually exist. And then that's really bad experience. So we actually have a policy, and I won't name large players, not in India, outside India as well, have this policy policy of putting these expired coupons, you know, at the end. We just don't do it. We think it's bad practice. If it's expired, it's expired. I don't want to, have a user try it out or something like that. So I think those are two things I think that kind of help us, to be where we are.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what is the future of coupons in India then?
If you look at couponing industry globally, I mean, you look at, you know, the large players in US and UK and other geos, they're growing rapidly. It's because the percentage of spend online is increasing. I think we are just in the infancy in India. In fact, I believe right now the market is really too small in India, right? As opposed to any other geo. So I just think we are in it for the long haul. Again, right now, like I said, I'm 100% focus on push engage. I have a team which manages and more, and not in the operating role in Coupon Rani anymore. It's in 15 months I have transitioned out. Mm-hmm. But my mandate for the team is that this is a long haul. Over, 5 to 10 years, we're going to see rapid expansion of folks buying online. And as more people buy online, a percentage of people actually buying through coupons, I mean, if you assume it's 5% or 10% today, it's going to be 15, 20. So with both these forces, you'll see a tremendous expansion of the market. But why I say it's over the long haul is because there are temporary pain points, meaning temporary headwinds in the market. For example, Indian e-commerce market, since last 6 to 12 months has been going through some tough times because of lack of funding and other issues, right? But these are market cycles. And if we are able to, overcome them, I think the long secular cycle, which is around, the tremendous growth in 10-year time frame, will benefit us.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about investment then. I believe you're also a VC as well.
No, so I would say I'm an angel investor right now. So I used to be a venture capitalist in the US, but right now I do angel investing in the personal capacity. And yeah, so I mean, for me, I'll begin by saying that I do recognize having come from the investing world. And I would say that I have actually done the journey in the reverse way. Most people actually become entrepreneur, then become angel investor, and then they become a VC. But I have done the other way, and I have always kind of followed my passion. For me, angel investing, or for that matter, entrepreneurship was all about building from scratch. And angel investing, to that matter, is not about returns, because I do know the large returns will only come when you deploy large capital. Also, the large returns will only come when you deploy capital across multiple companies, which means you have to have diversification. But if your pool of capital is low or small, you cannot have that. So I understand that. So having said that, so why do I do angel investing? Two reasons. One is I actually learn as much from entrepreneurs as they learn from me. So for example, if I'm doing SaaS or consumer internet, I will try to invest in, companies in that space. So I also understand, also I can share something with them, right? So I kind of really want to add value. Of course, at the end of it, I do think that if I can, get some good returns, that's fine. But even break even is good for me. So net, I invest in similar businesses, in businesses where I have a deep understanding of how they operate. So I'm able to help them at operating level. I don't do too many deals, one or two deals a year. And so far it's been fine. So far I've had 7 investments. 2 companies have gone down or bust. Mm-hmm. But we were able to recover some money. One has exited. So I just had my first exit recently. Mm-hmm. And there are still 4 in, still going on well. So I do hope 1 or 2 more exits will come. But with my one exit alone, I have probably already returned my investment. So far it's looking good. And I would say now, having spent so many years, I have a lot more confidence in my investing. And I actually go a lot by gut. At the stage at which I invest, it's all about people. And that's all I just look at. And I do make my investing decisions fairly quickly.
Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of listeners who may be doing startups and looking to raise finance. In terms of like the pitch deck and the pitch, how should they do it?
See, I feel if you're looking to raise an angel fund, I think at that stage, your team is very important. Your commitment, your integrity, your passion, and your kind of desire to really succeed is really important. Of course, the idea is, but I do feel, because at that stage, what you come up with, as long as it's in a space that is generally big, you could maybe potentially start off with a suboptimal point or something. That's fine. So I'm looking for, I would say, a good team, followed by, I would say, something which is in large market. That's kind of my kind of filter per se. And so I don't go by any of the stuff that you are saying, maybe, hey, the deck should have this. That's fine. I think that's probably more for maybe post. So I actually also put money at the incubation stage, right? It's like the first money where people have just, thrown an idea together in a team and they're just building it. So in fact, some of the best exits or returns are in that space, but it's extremely risky. The failure rate is very high in that space. But that's where I operate, and also the angel. But that's where, like I said, yes, some of the other factors that you read are very true, but maybe for slightly later stage investing.
Mm-hmm. So let's say you invest in a company. What do you look for after the first year? Is it like money? Is it hits to the website?
Sure. So I think that's a great question. So I think for every business, it's different. For a consumer internet company, it's about how many visits they're getting, what's the engagement like. For a SaaS, it's about how many subscriptions they have got, how many paid subscriptions, what's the churn. So every business has like that critical one or two factors, and if they've got it right. And I think that's what we look for. I think at a high level, all we look for as an angel investor is this company going to reach the milestone it needs to reach before it raises the next round, right? So eventually, once you start raising money, it's about raising the next round. And so if I've done an incubation round, the goal is how can I help the company to get to the angel round? If I've done the angel round, what can we do to help the company to get to Series A? And the big question there is, with the money they've raised, are they going to get to Series A? And in general, for different spaces, you can speak to VCs in the space or other fellow investors, and they can tell you what those numbers will look like, and then backtrack from there. So I think it's all about passing the baton and seeing if the company can get to the next stage with the money that you put in.
What would you say like your favorite Indian startups and why?
Oh, right now?
Yeah.
That's a tough one you're asking me. I mean, I can pick one from my portfolio.
Yeah.
I like Explara.com the most. They're like the ticket master of ticketing. It's a tremendous, huge market in terms of ticketing. They already do so many ticketing events, huge market. And I think it's something that can, explode really well. So that's one, I would say. And apart from that, having seen some of the SaaS top startups, I actually like Freshdesk a lot, which is a help desk SaaS startup out of India. Of course, you couldn't call them a startup. They're probably much bigger now, but I also like them from day one. I mean, in fact, I have known Girish. He had actually pitched me as an angel investor, around 5 years back. In fact, I had committed to putting money, but then, of course, he raised directly Series A. I've loved that company. Their execution is tremendous. They have taken on some of the large companies in the space sitting in Chennai, and they have really good execution. So from a product and execution side, I love them. I mean, and I think they're kind of a proof point to kind of show to the folks outside India that, from India, global SaaS startups could be built.
Mm-hmm. It seems like you're really passionate about startups. Is there anything that you don't like about startups?
No, absolutely. So I am, of course, I had to love this thing to actually move from a Wall Street job to a VC job to actually do this. So I'm absolutely passionate. I'm in it because I love it, not for the money, I guess. So I think, of course, startups are incredibly hard. I mean, they're really hard. And the model that I actually have built, some of the startups I have built, and I know we didn't discuss this, is I actually build my startups in a bootstrap way. And that's extremely hard. And I do it for a reason. One of it is that it brings a huge amount of financial discipline and the innovation is tremendous. But for Push Engage, for example, we are now considering, maybe raising money because it's really huge. But the point I'm making is that the journey of a startup which raises money is very different than a journey of a startup which actually is bootstrap. Their challenges are different. But from a bootstrap world, if you ask me, the challenges, they're around getting a good employee because, some folks may know you, but you're still not, big enough. So attracting good talent, making sure from the money you have that you're able to focus so much on only those important things. That's extremely hard because at a given time, you will probably probably have so many things coming at you. So I think those are hard. And then the personal cost of entrepreneurship, which I think very few people talk about. I mean, there is a lot that goes on in terms of your, you know, work-life balance. I mean, you have to sacrifice a lot. And so I think those are the things which are the hard ones. But I think my belief is, and I am just still, you know, growing with my startups, I think once you cross certain milestones, the work-life balance and some of these aspects become much easier. Or to some extent, some of these are easier if you probably raise, but then there are some other kind of pressures that come to you in terms of when you raise, you know, capital, which may be around. If you don't raise the next round, you know that you're not there. I mean, you couldn't survive. But for a bootstrap, they know how to, be tenacious and be there. So I think there are different kind of challenges, but each startup has their, you know, lows and highs. And I think that kind of makes it exciting as well, but it's a lot of pressure as well. So.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. What is the state of Indian startups today then? Is it booming or is it busting?
So I think there are cycles, like I said. So everything, I think you can take a 2-year view or a 5-year view or a 10-year or 20. It depends on where you're coming from. But I think the 1-year view would be, hey, the startups are shrinking right now. But the bigger picture would be that there was probably oversupply of capital, or I would say there was more funding of consumer focused startups that happened in last 2-3 years, which has caused, you know, some kind of, I wouldn't call it shrinkage, but fewer of those getting, you know, funded now because the unit economics don't make sense. But again, that's probably something which has already happened almost a year now. I think the things are improving from that perspective. But that being said, I still believe it's a great time to build a startup out of India. I still believe it's much, much easier to raise money in India as compared to anywhere else. But that having said that, I'm still not sure if India is the place to get always the best talent. You still have to look outside, and for certain kind of talent, you may have to, you know, be really global is what I'll say. But I think from a startup perspective, from raising money and from, you know, building businesses for India or for outside India, it's a great place to be.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned America before. What were you doing in America?
Yeah, so I actually went to my business school in US. I went to Fuqua School of Business. I did my MBA. And post that, I actually worked in Wall Street. I used to be an equity analyst. I used to cover stocks for Bank of America. I did that for a few years, and then I joined the venture fund, which I was telling you. So that's kind of my experience in the US. But that's my second stint. My first stint was right after my school, my graduate school in India. I went to Indian Institute of Science, did a computer science. Right after that, I joined Hewlett-Packard. Mm-hmm. And with Hewlett-Packard, I spent around a year and a half in the US as consulting for HP. And that was when I was in Bay Area. But that's kind of when I saw the first burst, the 99-2000 burst. And then when I was in US the second time, I saw the mortgage crisis. So I have kind of seen two cycles. Of course, it makes me, you know, more white haired than ever, but I have seen those cycles. But so those are my two stints where I kind of stayed. I've lived almost 9 years in US. But then I've kind of decided to move back. So
what was the one thing you learned from your MBA?
Well, I think MBA was, multiple things. I mean, I love the international experience. I also recognize that it was all about people, and I actually still value the relationships I developed during my school. And those are some of the things that's most valuable. And of course, I would also add that it's only in US that it's possible that you could actually switch careers with an MBA. So for somebody who was doing, who was a hardcore engineer, who became a business development person, to switch to a Wall Street career probably is only possible had I not done an MBA. So I think MBA helped me make a switch, try out alternate career paths. And of course, the experience of international MBA was tremendous. And finally, the kind of relationships that you built is something that you kind of take with you. I mean, it's almost 11 years I graduated.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned work-life balance. What, have you got any hobbies and interests? How do you relax?
Yeah, no, I have. So I have a son who's 9. So he's been learning piano for a year and a half. So I also go for and attend piano with him. So that's how I kind of keep learning new stuff. And so I'm almost at the same level, although now he beats me in his piano because he's ahead of me, gets more time. But so that's something I do. I still, I love a lot of basic fundamental stuff. So I love building electronic circuits. I'm already prepping with the Arduino and other stuff, you know, do some of that. So I think that keeps me busy. And then I'm actually in general, you know, social, I kind of host events and parties and whatnot. So for my school, for example, Duke, Fuqua, we have, you know, several events. In fact, tomorrow I'm hosting one event, which is for all the Fuqua or Duke alumni in Bangalore. And so those are some of the things that actually help me unwind. And then I've very recently picked up a new one, which is around trekking. Mm-hmm. And I will put it on record because that's my target. I want to do the Everest Base Camp trek, and that's I'm preparing for in the next 12 months. But so I'm looking towards it. So I'm looking forward to it. So.
You said you like organizing parties. Let's say you could invite anyone, dead or alive, and like three or four people. Who would they be? And what would you cook them?
That's a tough question. I love entrepreneurs. Yeah. I would actually invite bootstrap entrepreneurs, right? And so I would invite one or two bootstrap entrepreneurs. So whether it's a Bill Gates, I mean, it's kind of hard for me to kind of name. I mean, they're like big names out there. But sometimes I've found folks that people don't know. Mm-hmm. Also are hugely inspiring. Their stories are equally or even more fascinating. So I couldn't name names, but my target would be a mix of somebody who everybody knows publicly. Mm-hmm. And then there are some which are unknown, maybe bootstrap, and they've kind of been there and done that. And I think that's something which I look forward to interacting with because their journeys are very valuable.
Last few questions then. What should first-time founders be focusing on?
I think the first thing I would say, only one message I have for the founders is that I never give up. It's going to be hard going in. Don't think it's going to be cakewalk. Even if you raise money, it's going to be very hard. So just don't give up. Times are going to be tough. If you give up, your chance of failure is 100%. If you don't give up, you still have a shot of success. So that's the whole thing I would say. But having said that, be careful to listen to the market. Don't be kind of lost in your bubble because sometimes we don't. When I say don't give up, doesn't mean that don't listen to the market. It just means that, of course, listen to the market. But if things are tough, in many aspects, just kind of be with them. So that's the only message I would say. And of course, for the first timers, take a lot of mentorship, will take a lot of help from folks who have done it before, so you don't make those mistakes again.
Mm-hmm. It seems that you've done a lot in your life. Is there anything left to achieve?
There is a lot. Yes, I've done. So a lot of my friends tell me, hey, Ravi, you've done so, like, I've switched my career 4 times. Like, hey, when are you going to get a fighter pilot? I don't know. I'm still love. See, I tell you what, the more I learn, the more I realize that how little I know. And my son is a great example of kind of showing me that I'm just still behind in so many things. So I just want to learn a lot of more things and then hopefully also be a successful entrepreneur. But I think I also feel some of the things that I learn or do actually help me become a better entrepreneur. Like I think if I did the trekking and did the Everest base crank, I mean, it's another way where, you know, you need determination and it kind of helps you. So I think in a way it's kind of all reinforcing and helping me, you know, become a better entrepreneur is what I see.
Mm-hmm. Last question then, for people who want more information on what you do, how do they connect with you?
Sure. So best way is Twitter. I am at Trivedi Ravi. And the second best could be you could send me an email. I'm at ravi@pushengage.com. But Twitter is the best way to kind of reach out to me. And in general, if you have any question, I also request folks to please send in very specific questions. Then I can definitely answer very specifically as opposed to some generic stuff because it's really hard to answer to those.
Brilliant, Ravi. Thank you for coming on the show today.
Thanks, Neil. Thanks for having me. It was great.
So that's Ravi, and if you like him more, you can follow him on Twitter. That's the end of the show. If you liked it, please leave a rating and review of the show. Just search for The Indian Startup Show on iTunes. For Android users, we are on Stitcher, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Instacast, Podkicker, Downcast. Thank you for listening. I shall be back next week. Thank you and goodbye.